Hugh and Review, celebrating 40 years of audio production, welcomes you to this week's edition of the Glasgow Times Sports Podcast, recorded from our studio in the Bishopriggs Media Centre and by our volunteers working from home. Keep up to date with Q and Review news via our Facebook, Twitter or Instagram at Q and Review, that's @CUEANDREVIEW, or get in touch with us directly by emailing information@qandreview.com, that's INFORMATION @CUEANDREVIEW.com, or by calling 0141 772 3976. Please like and share our podcast and give us constructive feedback.
Evening Times Sport, August 8. Celtic transfer latest in the hunt for Starfelt replacement. Report by Aidan Smith. Celtic have already launched transfer plans to replace Carl Starfelt, with the Swede expected to leave Parkhead this week. The 28-year-old has been heavily linked with a move to La Liga side Celta Vigo in a deal worth £4.3 million. Brendan Rodgers confirmed after Saturday's Scottish Premiership win over Ross County that Starfelt had likely played his final game for the club, and plans were in motion to bring in a replacement. Reports in Sweden now suggest that Celtic are looking to bring in Elfsborg defender Gustav Lagerbilk as a possible replacement in a £3 million move. The 23-year-old is viewed to have great potential and has already featured for his national team on one occasion. Speaking after Saturday's win over Ross County, Rodgers explained about Starfelt, saying, "I wanted to put Carroll on because it might be his last game here. He has been a great servant to the club. There is interest in him and he would like to take up that possibility. We will resolve that as quick as we can. The clubs are in communication, so I am sure that will go through at some point next week. He probably felt it was a time to move on. There are certain conditions there that has made him think he will be going to one of the top leagues. And economically, it is hard for us to compete on that side. And obviously his partner is no longer here and has moved on. But I have to say, total professional, first class. And if it didn't go through, I know I can rely on him. But I think it probably will. We would need to get another centre-half. My idea is to get four centre-halves who are competitive." Report by Aidan Smith. Evening Times Sport, August 8. Nick Rogers says, "Women's Scottish Open at Dundonald, a breath of fresh air." You have probably noticed that there's a heck of a lot of cycling stuff going on just now. In fact, there are so many folk billing around the parish on bikes, I wouldn't be surprised if you had to stop reading this very sentence just for a moment to allow a blooming peloton of a road race to whiz across the page. Have they hurtled through yet? Yes? Right. Let's crack on before they come thundering by again. Oh, for goodness sake, here they are already. I've decided that everything these days has to be big and loud. Sorry, big and loud. The Open Championship, for instance, is a vast beast, and for a fairly old school observer like myself, probably just too vast. Like a lot of showpiece events now, it is populated by a growing army of hark-at-me exhibitionists, boorish, half-soddled oafs, and their swaggering, oi oi, pals. And no, I'm not talking about the golf writers here. Anyway, after the jam-packed Leary Lads Rammy of the Hoy Lake Open, which I know from first-hand accounts startled some Hoy Lake members, as well as high-ranking officials, the Women's Scottish Open at Dundonald Links provided such a gust of welcoming fresh air, it could have registered on the Beaufort scale. As a spectating experience, it was in many ways one for the purists, a gentle, civilized, welcoming arena for simply watching golf. Okay, the crowds were not massive. Getting big numbers through the gates for anything other than, say, an Open or a Scottish Open is a challenge in a country spoiled for golfing choice. But they were decent enough, and the atmosphere was one of enthusiastic, knowledgeable appreciation. Throw in largely helpful weather, and it made for an excellent tournament. Hopefully, the deal with Dundonald can be extended, because it feels like the Women's Scottish Open now has an established and popular home. As I twiddled my thumbs at the mixed zone interview area, there's a lot of waiting around at a golf event, you know. I watched a number of young spectators eagerly queuing for an autograph from a player that is not me. The only adulation I got came from some curious gentleman craning his neck over the barrier and saying, "Look, there's that Bastion of the Herald." Well, I think he said Bastion. But I digress. Watching these cheery young souls interact with world-class golfers, and there were 8 of the global top 12 at Dundonald, showed that the game often needs nothing more than its marquee players to be, how they say, cool in the eyes of a new generation. Golf occasionally hires celebrity figures or faces from other sports in an attempt to attract a wider core audience. Promotional bump for this week's AIG Women's Open, for example, has an ex-England women's footballer saying how great female golfers are. It can at times feel a bit naff and, dare I say it, desperate. If golf cannot use the bountiful, colourful characters within its own realm to champion its cause, then it really does have issues. I suppose this is all part of the ongoing fight for relevance. As various female pursuits flourish in the mainstream and garner unprecedented levels of coverage, look at the Women's Football World Cup or the Netball World Cup that was just on. Golf continues to muddle on in the margins and tends to miss the tailwinds that gust behind other women's sports. But let's not end on a downbeat note. I'm still enjoying that breath of fresh air from Dundonald. And another thing, it's been a couple of months now since the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour and the Saudi Public Investment Fund, which bankrolls the LIV series, announced a proposed alliance in a stunning announcement that led to every single jaw in the golf industry dropping to the floor. The clandestine nature of the discussion stunned all and sundry, and trust in Jay Monahan, the PGA Tour's commissioner, went flying out of the window. If this happened in my day, in my prime, "There's no way Monahan is around, no way," said Ernie Els during an outspoken rant at the Open, where he made his feelings about the embattled tour chief abundantly clear. "And the board has to change. You do shit like this, I'm sorry, it's not right," he added. Well, the shake-up continued last week when Tiger Woods joined the PGA Tour's policy board, as the circuit's top brass agreed new governance and transparency measures with its players. 6 of that 12-strong panel which decides how the tour is run, is now made up of high-ranking players. Moods may not be playing much golf these days due to his ongoing rehabilitation from his latest surgery, but his mighty presence on the board will make as big an impact as his 15 major wins. Woods, who had made it clear last year that he was very much against the whole LIV movement, opted to remain silent amid the pandemonium that greeted June's news of a proposed merger of warring factions. Now that he's on the board, I'm sure he'll have plenty to say. Players don't get more powerful than Woods, and player power on the tour has now flexed a huge muscle. How long Monahan lasts, meanwhile, is anyone's guess, says Nick Roger. Evening Times Sport, August 8. Postecoglou refers to Celtic as he is quizzed over Harry Kane. Report by Aidan Smith. Ange Postecoglou has name-checked Celtic as he responded to questions about transfer interest in star Tottenham man Harry Kane. The England captain has been heavily linked with a move away from London this summer, with Bayern Munich already having a number of bids knocked back. Postecoglou is relaxed on the situation, however, and he feels his experience of the past will help him navigate his way through the Kane transfer saga. He told Sky Sports, "It's the same as every other club I've been at. It's always tough at the beginning. At Celtic, you just have to look at the first six games, and we lost three of them because we were still buying players up until the last day of the window. I did not even have a core of a team, let alone missing a key player or two. And it was the same in Japan. So the beginnings are always like that, and for me, it's kind of normal. When you go into a job, you are going in knowing that they are seeking change, and whenever there's change, the beginnings are tough. In this case, Kane is obviously the biggest one, but you just learn to deal with it. I have learned to become disciplined, to make sure that I do not just focus on one thing. I don't get distracted. The most important thing right now is for us to build a team. It's not about one or two players. If this was year two or three of the project, and the team is already playing the way I want them to, and we've got the foundation of a really good squad, and Harry was the only thing floating about, then I'd be spending more time on it, and it would probably be a little bit more distracting in terms of the energy I need. But right now, as important as Harry is to this group, it's important what I do with the group." Report by Aidan Smith. Evening Times Sport, August 8. Rangers sent Servette warning. Report by Ewan Graham. Former Celtic defender Ramon Vega has warned Rangers not to underestimate Champions League third qualifying round opponent Servette ahead of their first leg clash at Ibrox tomorrow night. The Swiss side edged out Genk after a shootout last week, having played the vast majority of their second leg in Belgium with 10 men. And former Switzerland international Vega, who won the treble during a six-month stint at Parkhead in 2001, insists that team unity will prove a substantial barrier to Michael Beale's side's progress to the playoff round. Said Vega, "Although there's not really one individual that Rangers need to look out for, that doesn't make them any less dangerous. Servette is a team, and it's all about the collective with them, with every player having a job to do and knowing how to do it. Last week, they played with 10 men for 2 hours against Genk in Belgium, but still came from behind twice before going through after a penalty shootout. but the player's tactical awareness is so high that you wouldn't have noticed. It didn't affect them at all. On Saturday, they were away to Stade Lausanne-Uche and took a point with a last-minute goal, because this is a team that doesn't give up. There is a lot of money at stake when it comes to qualifying for the Champions League, and Swiss clubs, particularly one as small as Servette, need that money every bit as much as Celtic and Rangers. So there is every incentive for Weller's players. However, at the moment, Rangers is a wounded tiger, and as we know, a wounded tiger can be very dangerous. Report by Ewing Graham. Evening Times Sport, August 8. Rugby. Finn Russell key to Scotland revival against France. Report by Stuart Bathgate. If you were told that a team was lively, energetic and creative in one half, but sluggish and out of sorts in the other, you would naturally presume that the energy came first and the sluggishness second. But Scotland somehow got things the other way round against France on Saturday, and according to Darcy Graham, the credit for the revival after the break should largely go to Finn Russell. The first half at Murrayfield was both turgid and troubling from a home supporter's point of view, as a second-string French side went in at the break, 21-3 ahead. But instead of succumbing to a damagingly heavy defeat, Scotland somehow succeeded in scoring 22 unanswered points after the interval to win 25-21. And that despite playing with 14 men for the final half hour, following Xander Fagerson's sending off. Pierre Schoeman and Dave Cherry got two of the tries, while Russell himself ended up with 10 points from two conversions and a couple of penalties. It was Graham who really got the comeback started, however, with the first try of the second half, although the Edinburgh winger himself insisted that he and the team had been inspired by a few choice words from the first-time captain. The second half was a lot of fun, said Graham, who has now scored 19 tries for his country and has Stuart Hogg's all-time record of 27 firmly in his sights. We had a chat at half-time about what we wanted to get out of it, and Finn just said, "Let's go out, have some fun, and chuck the ball about." We did that. That's our game. That's what we want to be doing. But we didn't do it in the first half. We didn't look after the ball well enough. I never really got any phases going, which meant we struggled. We went into the dressing room at half time and were like, "We pretty much need to start again, go back to what we do, and do it well." We just had to write the first half off. You can get hung up on things like that, but if you let it bother you, you're never going to win the game. So you do have to write it off. France put a serious amount of pressure on us in that first half, but the second half was a lot of fun. The fight back necessitated a lot of hard work, of course, as well as sheer enjoyment. And Graham and his teammates know they're likely to face an even tougher challenge when they meet the French again in Saint-Étienne on Saturday night. Home advantage will be one factor in France's favour, needless to say, but it's also all but certain that head coach Fabien Galthi will restore his leading players to the squad after giving them a rest last week. Gregor Townsend's side have already lost in France this year, having gone down 32-21 in February's Six Nations Championship clash. But their 2021 victory at Stade de France is still relatively fresh in the memory, and Graham is convinced that as long as they play more consistently to the level they achieved at times 3 days ago, they will give themselves a chance of making it 3 wins out of 3 in their World Cup warm-up so far, following their initial victory over Italy. The 26-year-old continued, "We want to play the best in the world, and the French team is the best in the world when they've got all their big dogs back. It's going to be a tough one to go over there, but we are going to look at ourselves hard after that first half especially, and then take the positives from the second half. We're going to go over there and be confident, especially after that second half. If we can play like that for the full 80 minutes, I don't see why we can't turn them over or have an upset. Every time we've played in France, it's proven to be one of the toughest places to go. We'll learn a lot about ourselves in that game for sure." Head coach Townsend, who cut his World Cup training squad from 37 to 33 on Sunday, will name his match day 23 to face France on Thursday. It is still unclear whether first-choice scrum half Ben White will be fit to play after hobbling off 3 days ago with a foot injury, although the odds are on his being rested. Meanwhile, Xander Fagerson will today attend a disciplinary hearing by video after his sending off for dangerous play on Saturday. The Glasgow Warriors' tight head is in danger of being banned from Scotland's remaining 2 World Cup warm-up games against France this Saturday, then Georgia a week later, and could also be suspended for some games at the tournament itself. Report by Stuart Bathgate. Evening Times Sport, August 9. Beal makes Rangers no real concerns claim. Report by Chris Jack. Michael Beal insists he has no real concerns in the aftermath of the defeat to Kilmarnock that left Rangers trailing in the Premiership title race on the opening weekend of the campaign. The Ibrox boss saw his revamped side slump to a shock loss at Rugby Park as furious fans made their feelings clear at the end of a low-key light blues performance. Now Rangers can ill afford another slip-up as they purport to host Servette in the first leg of their Champions League third qualifying round clash this evening. The winners of the tie will face either PSV Eindhoven or Sturm Graz for a place in the group stages of the competition this term. And Beal still has full belief in the squad that he has assembled, as he backed his side to earn a positive result to get the season off and running at the second attempt. Beal said, "This is a club of big highs and very, very big lows, and not much in between. We know that. Listen, it was a disappointing result at the weekend. It's a place where, as a football club, we've not always done well. At the weekend, in a game where possession-wise we were quite comfortable, I felt we lacked some forward running. We lacked some directness in terms of our play. We will certainly want to improve on those areas when we go back and play against Servette. I have no real concerns. I see the group training every single day, and I see the level of the players that have come in. The group certainly needs to settle down a little bit, that's for sure, with the amount of players coming in. But there are no excuses on that. We train together every day, and we are a team. We need to go out and get positive results. That game needs to be pushed to the back of our mind at the moment. We don't get anything from playing on that. We need to play this game for what it is, which is a very important one." Report by Chris Jack. Evening Times Sport, August 9. Celtic transfer targets Royal Connection revealed. Report by David Irvin. Celtic could land a royal replacement for Carol Starfelt should Gustav Lagerbilk complete a transfer switch to Parkhead. The 23-year-old defender is thought to be viewed as a potential successor to Starfelt in Glasgow, with the Celtic defender set to leave the club this summer. And Lagerbilk is among the players being targeted by Celtic, with initial interest confirmed by Elfsborg chief Stefan Andreasson. Now it has been revealed that Lagerbilk has a royal connection in his homeland and is number 254 in line for the Swedish throne. While Celtic are interested in his defensive capabilities on the pitch, it appears that Lagerbilk is well set off the park, even if he doesn't use his title of Baron. The son of Count Johan Lagerbilk, the defender is a descendant from a family which gives him his own title and coat of arms. He previously wore a pair of shin guards with the coat of arms on them. As quoted by the Daily Record on his royal connections, Lagerbilk said, "For me, it's nothing special, but I understand that people can think it's funny, because it's not that common to have names like that in the football world. For me, it's just a name, and everything gets a little bit magnified." On the Celtic transfer interest, Elfsborg chief Andreasson said, "We have had a dialogue in this case. There is an interest, yes. But we are not in a negotiation. Then the club must move from interest to acting powerfully and concretely. We are not there right now. The trade-off is, as always, in the summer window. We have managed to have healthy conversations with our players. The most important thing is the club and the situation we are in. We are always positive that players can go for the right price. Many players want to leave Sweden, so we have dialogues when there is a good time for it. Sometimes, when we don't think the bid is good enough, we might say no, and then it might take a while, and then something better might come along, and then players might still be happy. We know roughly what it would mean for a transfer for some players. We have a dialogue with the players and their representatives. We have that with multiple players now, partly with Gustav, partly with several others. These are pleasant problems." Report by David Irvin. Evening Times Sport, August 9. Liam Cooper ruled out of Scotland action. Report by Ewan Payton. Liam Cooper has been ruled out of Scotland's upcoming international fixtures. The Leeds United captain will be sidelined for around 2 months after rupturing a foot ligament in Sunday's home draw against Cardiff. The 31-year-old picked up the injury after an awkward landing following scoring Leeds' first goal in the Championship fixture. The news is a blow for Steve Clarke and the national team. He will certainly miss the Euro 2024 qualifier against Cyprus on September 8th, as well as a friendly match against England at Hampden 4 days later. Scotland will then be back in action around a month later, with away trips to Spain and France, with the latter another friendly game. It remains to be seen if the centre-back, who was stretchered off at the weekend, will recover in time to feature in those encounters. Leeds said in a statement, "We can confirm Liam Cooper ruptured his plantar fascia during Sunday's Championship draw with Cardiff City. As a result of the injury, the captain is ruled out of action for up to 8 weeks." Evening Times Sport, August 9. Rangers officially confirm Sakala transfer exit. Report by Ewan Payton. Rangers have officially confirmed the departure of Fashion Sakala. The 26-year-old has joined Al Fayyah Football Club in Saudi Arabia for an undisclosed fee. The Zambian international joined the Ibrox club on a free transfer from KV Oostend in the summer of 2021 and went on to make 91 appearances in a light blue shirt, scoring 24 goals. It was no secret that the forward would be moving on from Rangers, with Michael Beale revealing last Friday that he was in talks over a switch to the Middle East. Now his decision to join the Saudi Pro League has been announced, and Beale commented, "Fashion was a hugely popular person in our squad and played an important role in the team from the moment I arrived as manager. On the pitch, he scored and assisted a number of goals, whilst off the pitch, his infectious personality and natural enthusiasm made him an outstanding teammate. He departs the club for a very good opportunity in Saudi Arabia, and everyone at Rangers wishes him and his family every success in the future. He leaves Rangers with a lot of friends and a big good luck from all the staff and players. He will always be welcome back at Ibrox in the future." Speaking at today's press conference and asked if he would bring in a replacement, Beale added, "Yes, possibly. It's not something that's at the forefront. I think in the forward areas we are quite healthy with numbers at the moment. I think Tom Lawrence is back in training and will be back available shortly. Kemar Roof is back fit, and that's two players that we didn't have last year, so we're still quite healthy in numbers." Report by Ewan Payton. Evening Times Sport, August 9. St Johnstone keeper in shock injury. Report by Aidan Smith. St Johnstone have been dealt a further injury blow after goalkeeper Ross Sinclair suffered a horror arm break during a bounce game. The Saints youngster was between the sticks during a behind-closed-door fixture against Queen's Park on Monday, where he suffered a double break in his elbow with dislocation after diving for a ball. The 22-year-old has already undergone surgery on his arm, but he now faces months on the sidelines. As a result, manager Stephen McLean will be forced to bring in another goalkeeper to challenge number one, Dimitar Mitov. It is understood that the club are already in talks with potential goalkeeping targets ahead of this weekend's trip to Ross County. St Johnstone are already in desperate need of numbers, with McLean revealing that he is after a winger, an attacking midfielder and a striker to bolster his options for selection, with the Scottish Premiership campaign already underway. McLean explained, "I'd like another midfielder, wide player and striker. We are looking at a bit of pace in wide areas. We are working hard on that. Fingers crossed we can get a couple in this week. We are spinning plates. Things can change, but we would like stuff done as soon as possible. I think people could see the direction we're trying to go in with the players we've brought in. We've got enough senior players at the club, so it's about getting the blend right. If we can add a few more, we can get to where we need to go." Boss McLean also revealed a further injury blow, with Dre Wright a doubt. He injured his calf at the weekend, and he'll be assessed later in the week. Evening Times Sport, August 9. Rugby. Sione Tupulotu nailed on for Scotland World Cup slot. Report by David Barnes. Assuming he gets through Saturday's match against France in Saint-Étienne unscathed, Sione Tupulotu is pretty much guaranteed to be one of the 33 players named in Scotland's World Cup squad next Wednesday. The Australian-born 26-year-old has been a revelation since moving north from Yamaha Jubilo in Japan to join Glasgow Warriors during the summer of 2021. Qualifying to play for Scotland through his Greenock-born grandmother, he made his international debut against Tonga just a few months after his arrival on these shores, and has now established himself as a near automatic pick in the number 12 jersey with 17 caps to date, offering a mouth-watering blend of powerful running, clever kicking, neat ball handling and robust defence. He and his centre partner Hugh Jones were the only two Scots named in the official 2023 Six Nations team of the tournament, while he has formed a close on and off field bond with his standoff, Finn Russell, with whom he shares both a fondness for rather outlandish, by rugby standards, fashion, and a cavalier instinct to playing the game. Tupulotu's rapid rise in stature within the squad, and a shift from head coach Gregor Townsend towards encouraging players to be more free-thinking, was highlighted by his selection as vice-captain alongside Russell as captain for last weekend's match at Murrayfield. Given the Scots recovered from 21-3 down at half-time to secure the biggest ever comeback win, that experiment can be counted as a success, even if the expected return of regular skipper Jamie Ritchie from a hamstring niggle this weekend means that Tupulotu is likely to step back from the officer class and rejoin the infantry. That will not concern the laid-back midfielder much, because he's quite happy focusing on his own game and only adding his tuppence in team huddles when he feels he has something worthwhile to contribute. He reasons, "It was good fun being vice-captain and a massive honour, but to be honest, I didn't think about it much earlier in the week, because with Grant Gilchrist as the other vice-captain, I was really third in line. So it was a pretty chill week for me with Finn and Gilly doing much of the talking. It was the same during the game when not much changed compared to what I usually do. I like to make a couple of defensive points in the huddle, but mostly Finn and Gilly did the talking, which was quite good for me because I could catch my breath. Everyone knows how much I love playing alongside Finn. We get along pretty well off the field, so it was easy just to take that onto the field. I've never been involved in World Cup preparation before, so this is all quite new to me. It's a high-pressure environment with everyone competing and trying to do their best to get on the plane. When the games start rolling around, like these big games against France, that kind of takes your mind off everything. You've got the challenge ahead of you at the weekend, and you're not looking much further down the road than that. At this stage of the World Cup build-up, there's a case to be made for wrapping all the team's most important players in cotton wool, but Tupulotu believes that Townsend is right to take a contrary view to that this weekend. And he adds, "There's always that shadow of doubt at the back of your mind in terms of trying to stay healthy, but the other side of it is trying to push yourself to the limit to get yourself into the best physical condition for when the big games roll around and matter at the World Cup. You just try not to think about it. I always treat every game as the next step and the chance to push yourself. You don't want to cheat and save yourself for the next week. You need to push yourself in every game. and hope that the rugby gods will look after you. Every time I come into training or into this environment, I try to be better than I was in the last campaign. So I want to push on to the World Cup and have a better campaign than I did in the Six Nations. These last 8 weeks of training have been so good for my body. After the Six Nations, I carried a few niggles into the last stretch of the season with Glasgow, so I am just grateful to have had the time to get my body right. It's in a good place now, and I do feel I'm the fittest I have been since moving to Scotland. All you can do then is try to translate it into the game. It was a good first hit out on the weekend. I felt I needed to get those minutes under my belt, having not played rugby for 2 or 3 months, and now I'm looking forward to going again this coming Saturday. Report by David Barnes. Evening Time Sport, August 10. Man of the Match display by Cantwell. Report by Matthew Lindsay. Rangers' narrow 2-1 win over Servette in the first leg of the Champions League third qualifying round doubleheader at Ibrox last night will have a number of ramifications. For a start, those supporters who revolted and in some cases wrote off the entire season after the 1-0 defeat to Kilmarnock in the Singe Premiership opener on Saturday evening will be a little less demanding about what the 23-24 campaign holds. James Tavernier and his teammates will head to Switzerland on Monday with a decent chance of recording the aggregate victory they need to progress to a playoff against either PSV Eindhoven or Sturm Graz. Elsewhere, Rangers manager Michael Beale will be unlikely to leave Todd Cantwell out any time soon. Beale was, with some justification, lambasted by irate Bears for not selecting Cantwell, the January acquisition who was one of his most creative and effective players in the second half of last season, at the weekend. The Englishman stated afterwards that his first signing had been omitted for tactical reasons, but his compatriot was a noticeable inclusion in the home team that took to the field before kick-off last night. He replaced Kieran Dowell on the left side of midfield and made an immediate impression. He showed a directness, an energy and a work rate which had been badly lacking in the Glasgow Giants' play down in Ayrshire throughout. He won them a penalty with his quick thinking in just the 5th minute. David Doleen failed to anticipate his opponent, ghosting in to pinch the ball in his area and inadvertently brought him down. The referee pointed straight to the spot and Tavernier converted. That was far from Cantwell's only significant contribution to proceedings. He applied pressure to the visitors' players when they had possession inside their own half. He used the ball intelligently whenever and wherever it came to him, and was prepared to drop deep and help the defence snuff out opposition attacks. He was everywhere. The former Norwich City man made headlines for his social media posts last term and became something of a hate figure for the supporters of other Scottish clubs. They dubbed the peroxide blonde Tick-Tock Tob, but he highlighted once again that he can walk the walk as well as talk the talk. He was booked by the match official somewhat harshly as he won the ball for a foul when play was started after half-time, but then drew a bad challenge out of Doleen which earned the Frenchman a second yellow and a red. He continued to probe for an opening in the final third and looked the player in a light blue jersey most likely to do so. It was no surprise he was named man of the match towards the end of regulation time. His bright showing underlined the folly of leaving him on the bench against Kilmarnock. He will, barring illness or injury, be one of the first names down on the team sheet for the visit of Livingston to Govan this Saturday, and then thereafter. Report by Matthew Lindsay. Evening Time Sport, August 10. Celtic confirm Starfelt exit. Report by David Irvin. Carroll Starfelt has completed his transfer exit to Celta Vigo. The 28-year-old Swedish defender has penned a deal with the La Liga club after interest was revealed at the weekend. He has signed a 4-year deal with the Spanish club, and a Celtic statement read, "After two full seasons with Celtic, Carroll Starfelt has left the club." The Swedish central defender joined the Hoops in July 2021 from Rubin Kazan and played 87 times for the Hoops, scoring 3 times. He leaves having won 5 domestic honours during his time at Paradise, including last season's historic treble. On Starfelt's exit, Brendan Rodgers had previously commented, "If you look at the bigger picture, I'm pretty sure in life I've made decisions based on my family. He's obviously in a really strong relationship, and we all make decisions based on relationships or family. Sometimes you have to compromise, but then if you're in a place or a time when you don't have to compromise, then if you can do something about it, you may well do so." Report by David Irvin. Evening Times Sport, August 10. Celtic pair emerge as championship transfer targets. Report by David Irvin. Celtic youngsters Ben Summers and Ben McPherson could join championship clubs on loan this summer. The teenagers, Summers 19 and McPherson 19, have been linked with Dunfermline and Queen's Park respectively. The Daily Record reports Dunfermline have made an approach to Celtic to land Summers on a loan deal this term. The Scotland under 21 international did feature for the Celtic first team last season under Ange Postecoglou and was a regular for the B team's side in the Lowland League. However, he could be tempted to land more game time in a loan switch away from Parkhead to Championship new boys Dunfermline. James McPake is keen to seal a deal to bring the attacking midfielder to East End Park. Dunfermline previously had Ewan Otu on loan from Celtic last season before signing the youngster on permanent terms. McPherson is similarly being eyed for a stint in the Championship with Queen's Park. The fullback is reportedly set to finalise a temporary switch to the Spiders, with the potential for the move to be confirmed before the weekend. It's claimed that McPherson already had the offer of a loan move with Admira Wacker, an interested party, but he turned down the offer to remain in Scotland. Meanwhile, Celtic star Caitlin Hayes has revealed she went undercover, but not for long, as she played fives with Rangers fans last year. Report by David Irvin. Evening Times Sport, August 10. Dessers confusion at Servette penalty award. Report by Matthew Lindsay. Rangers striker Cyril Dessers admitted he was stunned when Servette were awarded a penalty in the Champions League third qualifying round match at Ibrox. Dessers put Michael Beale's team 2-0 ahead in the first half of the encounter with the Swiss club to open his account for the Glasgow side. However, Lithuanian referee Donatas Rumsas ruled that the forward had handled the ball inside his own area and awarded the visitors a spot kick, which Chris Bedia converted. The first leg encounter finished 2-1 at the end of the 90 minutes, meaning Rangers have a lot of work to do in Geneva next Tuesday night to secure a playoff spot. But Desers felt the match official was wrong to give the penalty, as the ball has struck the head of Rangers left-back Borna Barisic before it hit his arm. He said, "The handball is really unlucky. That was confusing for me. Last week, we had a meeting with the referees, and they said if it is deflected off a teammate and it touches your arm, then it is never a penalty. It deflects like 1 meter in front of me from Barisic's head, and then it hits my arm. So I was 100% convinced that it won't be a penalty. But okay, he gave it. You have to turn a switch and get back going. It is unlucky and unfortunate for the team as well, because we had big momentum at that moment. But that's football." Desers, a £4.5 million signing from Italian club Cremonese this summer, confessed that he had enjoyed scoring in front of the Ibrox support. He is certain that his side can get the result they need in Geneva next week and progress to a playoff against either PSV Eindhoven or Sturm Graz. And he said, "It's an amazing feeling to score your first goal for Rangers in this shirt, in this stadium. An amazing feeling. I was happy to get the win. It was not easy. We maybe complicated it for ourselves after the red card when they were reduced to 10 men in the second half. It's only our second official game, but we'll grow from here, and I am confident. We had a lot of control and we were dominating, but maybe not enough big chances." Rangers captain James Tavernier, who opened the scoring from the penalty spot after Todd Cantwell had been brought down, confessed he was frustrated at the final scoreline. And he continued, "Obviously, we're a bit disappointed to not get a third goal. They go down to 10 men, but whenever that happens, they go into a block, and I thought maybe we could have been more patient. We go there 1-0 up, but we'll treat it as going in 0-0. It's a good start, a better performance than the weekend, and we'll go from there. We've just got to keep working hard and keep pushing, and the results will come. There were more deliveries from myself and Borna and through the team, and we're delighted to see Serial score. I'm sure more boys will add to their tally soon." Report by Martin Lindsay. Evening Times Sport, August 10. Sutton slates Kane for treatment of Postecoglou. Report by Aidan Smith. Chris Sutton has claimed that Harry Kane will have stuffed Ange Postecoglou if he decides to leave Tottenham now. Spurs have reportedly accepted a Bayern Munich bid for their star man worth around €100 million, and it is now down to the player to decide on his future. Kane has entered the final 12 months of his contract at Tottenham, but ignored the noise around his future to score 4 goals in a 5-1 friendly win over Shakhtar Donetsk on Sunday. Reacting to the news that Tottenham have accepted an offer, Sutton tweeted, "If Harry Kane leaves Tottenham now, he will have stuffed Ange Postecoglou. It's ridiculous him leaving 3 days before Tottenham's first game." Speaking recently on Kane, Postecoglou said, "We know there's one deadline, and that's the end of the transfer window. Beyond that, I'm in open dialogue with Harry and with the club on a regular basis. I've said to them that if the status quo changes, then inform me. I don't need to know about the comings and goings in between. I just want to deal with what's in front of me because, irrespective of the outcome, I'm building a team here. I cannot wait around for a decision either way to get going. We don't have the time or the luxury to do that. I'm working with what's in front of me. Harry certainly is invested in what we're doing, and we'll keep on doing that unless something changes. Report by Aidan Smith. Evening Times Sport, August 11. Barnaby bombed out of a Celtic matchday squad. Report by David Irwin. Alessandro Bernabe was reportedly dropped from the Celtic matchday squad after falling foul of Brendan Rodgers' demands at Parkhead. The Argentine left-back did not feature in the squad for the win over Ross County on the opening day of the new league season, and the Daily Record reports that Bernabe was dropped after sleeping in and arriving late for a pre-match meeting in the build-up to the match last week. It is claimed Rodgers left him out of the squad for the match after the incident. The report suggests Rodgers left the player in no uncertain terms, that the incident was unacceptable and cannot happen again. While Bernabe missed the match against Ross County, he could return to the squad against Aberdeen this weekend and try and put the blip in the past. It's claimed Rodgers has reminded the playing squad of his sky-high standards and the demands in place at the club under his leadership. There have reportedly been a couple of minor incidents with players since the summer, with Rodgers informing the playing staff he will not stand for any unacceptable conduct. Meanwhile, Rodgers has told Rio Hatate he has it all to prove under his leadership. On the Japanese midfielder, the Celtic boss said, "I have mentioned before, it's not in my contract to play any player. Rio's got 3 years left on his contract, so there's no rush. It's a new cycle, a new manager, and he has to prove himself. I'm not really worried about what's said or not. I'll play the team I see with the best energy, mentality and efficiency with how we want to work." There is no doubt Rio is a talented player, but there's other talented players in the squad. If players are not playing, I've been open and honest with them about where we are at, how I prepare a team, when I tell them the team, and when they're not playing, how they've got to respond. Rio's been really good in training. He didn't play, but he came into the game. He knows areas he needs to work on to play for me, and the structure of how I work. He's responded really well in training, and will absolutely be a player we need over the course of the season. You're picking the best team, not the best players, and assessing everything. Report by David Irvin. Evening Times Sport, August 11. Celtic youngster on Queen's Park loan move. Report by Ian Collin. Celtic youngster Ben McPherson is convinced Queen's Park will be the perfect club for his development as he bids to build a long-term future at Parkhead. The 19-year-old has joined the Spiders on a season-long loan after being involved with the Hoops first team over the course of their summer preparations. The Scotland Under-21 international featured against Yokohama F. Marinos and Gamba Osaka in Japan, as well as against Wolves in Ireland, before being an unused substitute in James Forrest's testimonial against Bilbao. The right-back said, "After a good period in pre-season with Celtic, both the club and I felt that a loan move would be ideal for my further development. There was interest from other clubs, but once I had spoken to Director of Football Marion Bowker and Head Coach Robin Veldman about the project and philosophy at Queen's Park, I felt it would be a first-class opportunity for me to continue to learn and develop at a very progressive club. I am here to work hard and to give 110% effort to the club, staff, my colleagues on the pitch, and most importantly, the fans. Report by Ian Collin. Evening Times Sport, August 11. Former St Mirren keeper reveals he'd turned down Rangers' transfer move. Report by Mark Walker. Former St Mirren keeper Vaclav Hadke has revealed how he once turned down a move to Rangers to sign for English fourth-tier side Salford City. The Czech shot-stopper spent 18 months in Paisley and attracted the attention of both Rangers and Celtic during his time with the Saints. He has revealed he held talks with the Ibrox club when he decided he was leaving St Mirren, but instead opted to sign for English League Two outfit Salford City. Latke later won a move to Ipswich Town, and he is now the Championship club's number one. But he admitted that his move to Scottish football was the springboard for his career. He said, "When I was leaving St Mirren, I discussed a transfer with Rangers, and we got down to personal terms. On the one hand, it was a difficult decision to join a club in the fourth division of English football compared with Rangers. But I wanted to prove myself in English football, and that eventually earned me a move to Ipswich Town. I am delighted I moved to Scottish football from Slovan Liberec. I didn't hesitate for a second when St Mirren contacted me. I transferred to Scotland. It's not English. It's a different language. I tried to communicate with my hands, my feet. But guys, when they speak, it's not the English you hear on TV where everyone speaks clearly. It's a Scottish version that they speak to their friends. I was lost. My wife and I hired a teacher and tried to make progress. But when I transferred to England, it was like balm to the ears." Report by Mark Walker. Evening Times Sport, August 11. Gift given to volunteers banned in Glasgow over security threat. Report by Caroline Wilson. Volunteers at the UCI Cycling World Championships have been banned from using sustainable water bottles gifted by the organisers because they are a security threat. Thousands of helpers were given commemorative aluminium bottles as part of their welcome pack and told they could be used at events in Glasgow venues, including the Emirates Arena, provided they were empty on arrival. In the run-up to the championship starting, volunteers were told that items prohibited venues included any glass or metal container other than aluminium water bottles. They could then fill them with free drinking water provided inside the venues. Spectators were, however, given conflicting information and told to bring a suitable empty clear plastic container when watching events. Now volunteers have been sent an email stating that they must bring their own, presumably plastic, water bottles, as metal and glass is prohibited. No explanation was given for the policy change, with days to go until the end of the championships. The email said any commemorative bottles brought to venues would be confiscated by security. One volunteer said, "Because we did not get an explanation, volunteers wondered if there was something wrong with their bottles. There were also real concerns that the bottles might have been some kind of security risk at venues. A spokesperson for Glasgow Live said, as part of their welcome pack, our Champs Clan volunteers received a selection of sustainable competition branded souvenirs that can be used and cherished long after these memorable UCI Cycling World Championships have ended. Security measures at venues prohibit certain items, including metal and glass, for safety reasons. Updated information has been issued to volunteers at Glasgow venues to remind them to use their own reusable water bottles while on shift. Across the whole championships, 4,000 volunteers were enlisted, with 368 supporting the events in the Borders. Report by Caroline Wilson. Evening Times Sport, August 11. The on and off field factors at Kilmarnock. Report by Ewan Payton. After Kilmarnock's opening day Premiership victory over Rangers, the discourse was largely dominated by Michael Beale's side and their failings at Rugby Park. Their performance was not up to scratch, while Killies was top drawer. There were mentions of the pitch, but most recognised that the surface could not be used as an excuse for Rangers' deficiencies last Saturday. A point that has been raised by pundits, fans, and even Beale himself, was the number of new players the Ibrox club had in their team. Five new boys started, including Jack Butland, Kieran Dowell, Cyril Desers, Sam Lammers, and Abdallah Sima. Their new £5 million striker Danilo entered the fray from the bench during the second half. It is a testament to Derek McInnes and his players that the hosts had eight fresh signings in their starting lineup and comfortably earned the 1-0 win. Robbie Diaz was awarded man of the match, but in reality, it could have been any one of them, with Matty Kennedy, Corey Nedaba, Marley Watkins, Kyle McGuinness, Stuart Finlay, Lewis Mayo, and Will Dennis all superb. It's not just the efforts of the players on the pitch which deserves praise, though. Admitted the boss, I have been fortunate with the dressing rooms I have had here. I inherited a really good dressing room, and we went on to win the league championship last season. You could maybe say it was the spirit and togetherness that really won the day for us in staying up, rather than any sense of real quality or individuals. I think this season, the signed boys are lucky to come into our dressing room. I really do. We have some really good lads, and the club as a whole deserves a lot of credit. There is a lot of support staff that works quickly to get players relocated, families up, kids into schools, boys into apartments and houses. The club is brilliant at that. And there's more than me and my football staff that have to encourage that settling in period. It is so vital. A lot of boys are coming here for the first time, and maybe even Scotland for the first time. We are well aware of that, and speaking to the boys who are currently here, like Kyle Vassell and the senior players, of making that extra effort with everybody. Last week was a sense of proper together performance. We all had each other's backs, and that is what it takes. We are lucky that Billy Bowie owns the hotel, and we can put them in there a lot of the time. But everyone wants to settle with kids and families as quickly as possible. Everyone is in a rush to do that, and everything is rushed and accelerated to try and get everyone settled. You could not do it without a brilliant dressing room and brilliant support staff who tried to do that. I remember how it felt when I went to England and went to France. These things are massively important. You have to make sure the player concentrates on his performance and training, and not worrying about his kids and misses settling. We try hard at that, and it is important. Finding a settled first 11 was a struggle for McInnes last season, for a variety of reasons. Only on a handful of occasions did the same lineup take to the field in consecutive games. Fans are keen to see the same team which triumphed against Rangers at Tynecastle this Sunday, and it seems they may get their wish. McInnes said, "Only Joe Wright is missing. Vassell, Liam Donnelly and Rory McKenzie all played a bounce closed-door game on Tuesday and got important minutes, and I think Joe will be in full training next week. We are not looking to make too many changes, if any at all, from the team. We were really pleased with last Saturday, but having the other players back into it is important because everyone has a part to play." There will be no further movement on the transfer front this week, for McInnes explained, "We were hoping on one that maybe we could have potentially got this week, but circumstances have changed at his club. Not permanently, just in terms of a couple of injuries and stuff." Report by Ewan Payton. Evening Times Sport, August 11. The fixture. Puzzling Kane transfer saga. Report by James Morgan. There was a moment last week when the noise around Harry Kane's prospective move to Bayern Munich came to a lull. The Bayern chief executive, Jan Christian Driessen, and technical director Marco Neppe had just met Daniel Levy, the Tottenham chairman, in London to thrash out the terms of a prospective deal. What followed was virtual silence while those involved in the ongoing media circus attempted to fill in the blanks. Within a few days, however, Tottenham were agreeing transfers for defender Mickey van de Ven at Wolfsburg, striker Alejo Veliz at Rosario Central, and the Blackburn Rovers centre-back Ashley Phillips for a combined fee of around £50 million. For many Spurs fans, this was proof that a deal had already been unofficially agreed with Bayern, and that the London club was attempting to secure deals that would be exempt from the Kane tax. Then came a deadline, imposed by Bayern, for Spurs to accept an offer of £86 million by midnight last Friday. It came and went unheeded. The following day came reports that Levy had flown to Florida for a family holiday, with barely a cursory nod in Bayern's direction. In the absence of tangible information, there has been claim and counterclaim, but it mostly feels as if there is a degree of guesswork being appointed to the Kane transfer saga. Whether it was grandstanding by Levy or merely performative, no one knows, but history may be instructive here. There have been elements of the Gareth Bale to Real Madrid saga during the on-off Kane transfer. Levy has been cast as a hard-balling, no-nonsense negotiator who has won back a degree of goodwill from Tottenham fans who have become utterly exasperated by his decision-making in recent seasons, a series of missteps that has eroded faith in his ability to look after the club's best interests to an all-time low. Levy will point to the gleaming Superdome and world-best training facilities he has helped build as evidence to contradict the naysayers, while his critics will list his efforts to join the European Super League, poor selection of managerial personnel, and micromanagement of the club as reasons why Tottenham are in danger of undoing all of their good work over the past decade and beyond. but on this transfer, he has owned most of the narrative, and so that's what makes developments earlier more puzzling. It does not make sense for Spurs to sell their captain and talisman so close to the start of the season, unless, of course, you view it simply in financial terms. Even Levy knows, however, that this is not a zero-sum game. Kane's exit, should he decide to accept Bayern's offer now that Tottenham have agreed a price for the England captain, this late in the day and right before the season starts, will have an impact on the club's overall valuation. It also hampers efforts to return to the Champions League, and it leaves Spurs with a chunk of money in the bank that will immediately drive up the valuation of players Ange Postecoglou may wish to sign. Postecoglou is said to have made a positive impression on Kane, and earlier today there were still suggestions that he remained undecided on whether he wanted to move to Germany. The 30-year-old's wife, Kate, is pregnant, and her delivery date is imminent, while he is said to be unimpressed by aspects of the way Bayern have acted over the transfer. It may well be that the transfer is done, and this is all an elaborate PR exercise dreamed up by Levy and Bayern to create the ultimate wins for both clubs. But it also feels as if something weird is going on behind the scenes. It may also be that this has been leaked by the German side to put pressure on Kane, who may now be wavering on making the move. Or indeed, what we are now seeing play out may well have been ordained last week in that London meeting between Levy, Dressen and Nepi. Mercifully for everyone concerned, we will find out what's really going on sooner rather than later, says James Morgan. Evening Times Sport, August 14. Brendan Rodgers on axing left-back. His alarm works now. Report by Matthew Lindsay. Brendan Rodgers has stressed there are no issues between him and Alexandro Bernabe, despite the Argentinian left-back being left out of the Celtic squad for the Ross County game after sleeping in and missing a team meeting. Bernabe was named on the replacements bench for the Cinch Premiership match against Aberdeen yesterday afternoon, but the defender was not among the four substitutions which his manager made during the 3-1 win. However, Rodgers made light of the opening day disciplinary matter after the victory and stated that he has enjoyed working with the South American player since returning to Glasgow during the summer. And he said, "His alarm is working now. He has been brilliant in pre-season in terms of mentality and attitude, and I felt for him. The very morning of the first game of the season, whatever happened, the alarm did not go off. I don't have time to wait. If you start late in the game and you're not quite ready, then the game could be dead. It's gone. We draw a line under it. He's a good guy. You've got to learn and you've got to be ready. His professionalism is fantastic and there's no worry. When you come into a club, the standard of your performance on and off the pitch is vital. We all make mistakes, but you learn from them, and you'll be better for it." Rodgers handed game time to three summer signings against Aberdeen, Mick Nowrocki, Odin Tiago Holm, and Yang, and he believes they will all benefit from being involved in such a difficult outing. He said, "It was a tough game for us. The Aberdeen manager, Barry Robson, has made them very hard to play against. They are direct and get up onto your defensive line very quickly. So you have to fight for second balls. And the pitch was a bit longer than normal. Overall, it was a really good win for us. There were spells of really good football. We took the goals really well. and in those moments of adversity we stayed strong. It was a really good 3 points against one of our rivals. I think it will be great for their spirit, because they had to come through tough moments in the game. You've got to be strong and aggressive and defend the box well. And in the moments of quality, you need to show that to get the goals. It will really be a good boost for the players and the new players getting used to the league and how we want to work. Rogers was particularly pleased with how his centre-backs, Stephen Welsh, who replaced Cameron Carter-Vickers at half-time, and Noroki performed. "I thought Stephen was excellent when he came in," he said. "I like him. I took him with me one pre-season as a young player because I really liked him. But for whatever reason, he maybe hasn't played the games. He's a Celtic boy. He wants to be at the club. I want him to be at the club. I can't guarantee how many games he is going to play, but I know he is always ready. He trains really hard every day. He came into the game and played with composure. He's aggressive. Noroki still has a way to go in his fitness. He is aggressive. He defends the first ball well, whether in the air or he steps in. He's good with the ball at his feet. For centre-halves, it's all about the partnership. But I am really pleased with him since he stepped in, and he's only going to get better." Report by Matthew Lindsay. Evening Times Sport, August 14. Alison McConnell says, "Spar SFA deal hopefully means financial reward boost for the Scottish Cup." The news that Spar has extended its commercial association with the Scottish FA for another 4 years is to be welcomed. But hopefully that now means a decent financial reward for whoever wins the Women's Scottish Cup. The tournament was without a sponsor last season, as just over 10,000 supporters watched Fran Alonso's Celtic beat Rangers at Hampden. With the SFA, who took the tournament under its umbrella last season, shouldering the fees for the use of the national stadium and the use of VAR at the final, it meant there was no financial benefit to Celtic as they won the trophy for their second successive season. This year the competition will come under Spar's banner, with the commercial input giving scope for a proper remuneration package for whoever claims the trophy. With the Scottish Power also the new sponsor of the SWPL for the next 3 years, in a move that is the single biggest investment in Scottish women's football, it would appear that the numbers which the game attracted last season are being reflected in its growing commercial appeal. Rangers and Scotland international Rachel McLaughlin is confident that the numbers which turned out last term will be sustained as a fresh campaign kicks off this term. There were more than 100,000 attendances last season across the SWPL season, while the domestic attendance record was broken on 3 separate occasions. There is a slight misnomer in the record crowd which Celtic Park boasted as Celtic beat Glasgow City, with the 15,822 given that the Parkhead support were experimenting with a Celtic end standing section. But it is inarguable that there was a cultural shift around the women's game. Rangers and Scotland international Rachel McLaughlin said, "I think it was incredible to see the kind of numbers that we did. The challenge definitely this season is to make sure that people stay invested, and I think a lot of that comes down to an exciting and competitive league." Rangers opened their campaign away to Spartans with new manager Jo Potter getting her first competitive game in charge out of the way. The former England international replaced Malky Thompson in the dugout this season, with McLaughlin revealing that the players have enjoyed working with a new philosophy. She said, "It has been an exciting summer. There have been other changes with new players coming in, and we are all eager to get started. Joe has been great and is very experienced in the women's game, so there is a lot that we have already been able to take from her. We are just looking forward to getting started now. It has been a quick break, but we are all eager to get back to it." And another thing, every single player who has reached the last 16 of the FIFA Women's World Cup is due a $60,000 payment from FIFA for their efforts so far. Indications that this would be paid directly to players prior to the tournament changed when it was confirmed that the funds would be released by FIFA via the federations, as has traditionally been the case. Given the financial disparity in the men's and women's game, it is essential that these payments make it directly to the players. It is not an exaggeration to say it is life-changing amounts to the vast majority of those who are in Australia and New Zealand, with only a tiny percentage earning the kind of salaries that are common in the men's game. Paying federations rather than players means there are instances when players never receive the correct payments they are due. A FIFPro statement this week confirmed that after Nigeria had been eliminated by a fortuitous England side, that they were assisting players concerning bonus payments, camp allowances and expenses, some of which date all the way back to 2021. This topic had rumbled in the background all the way up to the tournament, and the Nigerian players were not the only team with these issues. When the football got underway, they chose to concentrate on the playing side before raising it upon their elimination as they prepared to fight what is theirs. It is up to the governing body to ensure that players are paid directly or threaten the immediate sanction of a ban for both male and female teams in all their competitions. And finally, England's Lauren James blotted her copybook this week with her moment of madness. It would be remiss to say she stamped on Nigerian Michelle Alozie in the last 16 tie, which England went on to win on penalties, given it was more of a tread on the back of the player. What was unambiguous, though, was that she didn't need to do it. She missed yesterday's semi-final win over Colombia as she kicked off her two-game ban, but there were some interesting asides to take from the incident. Firstly, there was no overreaction from the English media. This may be in part to the fact that England prevailed regardless, but there was also an immediate conciliatory social media exchange between the two. Secondly, Alozie graciously offered the olive branch after declaring that her butt was fine. "Abek, rest," she wrote on Twitter. "We are playing on the world stage. This game is one of passion, insurmountable emotions and moments. All respect for Lauren James." The United States-based player is quite something. Bored with the schedule of training and playing and the free time it creates, the Yale graduate works part-time in a Texas pediatric oncology unit with a view to going into a full-time medical career when she hangs up her boots, says Alison McConnell.
That concludes this week's edition of the Glasgow Times Sports Podcast. Please remember to subscribe to our channels at Kieran Review and to tell your friends about our service.